Welcome back to the Boundary Corner Podcast. I am Curtis Wilson.
I'm Brian Siegler, buddy. We live here on a Wednesday night. We got some drinks this time. We got some fun stuff to talk about, especially for Monday night.
We have a lot of stuff to talk about. Drinks this time, yes. Proudly for Monday night, holding the VT Food and Science Technology koozie we picked up there.
Swag.
Swag, all sorts of swag for Monday night, man.
Swag.
And we're going to get into that on the back half because there's so much to unload there. We'd forget about a lot of other stuff if we didn't. I had a super long day, Brian.
Tell me about it, man.
About 8:30 this morning. Dude, I'm pretty much going to be in meetings all day. And I was. And, you know, have some family in from out of town. And, man, we did some steaks. Fajitas on the grill tonight. Homemade peach ice cream. I prefer banana. I lost the
peach
war.
Ice cream.
Eat.
Oh man!
So
that's some Halifax shit right there. Homemade peach ice cream.
Yeah, and I think officially, mom bought us a ice cream maker because she forgot hers and she just bought one. It's like it's y'all's. I think. I hope at least because it'll be nice just to make ice cream occasionally.
I love when parents do that. You don't have this. I need this. I'm gonna buy it and you can keep it.
Exactly. It's a great thing. But after all that, after my crazy day, and I know you've been busy too, I completely missed the Jim Phillips ACC press conference. So, big guy, the floor is yours to inform me of what the hell happened.
Jim Phillips got up there and he kind of sang Kumbaya for a little bit. He was trying to talk about all the neighborhoods should be able to have success and we should all do what's right for the kids and keep the kids in mind. And, you know,
oh God,
it was like there was some decent points in there, but it was mostly kind of fluff and bullshit. I mean, I think the overarching theme is that, you know, he is keeping options open, whatever that means. Hopefully that means adding members and renegotiating the media rights in terms of the number.
Okay.
We need to be closer to that 40 mil versus that lower end of the 30s. That's what needs to happen. I don't know if that's going to be what ultimately comes through with this. But I feel like this was a talk that, if it was had 5 years ago, it might have landed better. But it's one of those things where here's how things, it's the should be versus the reality, right? So right now he's saying this is how things should be, but in reality they're not. So if you're not addressing reality, it doesn't really matter how things should be. I need someone that's having practical solutions, not pie in the sky dreams of what this thing should be. I think we're beyond that at this point.
College football ain't utopia anymore, is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, that ship has sailed. I mean,
it's gone.
You know, we're talking about it being driven by money, and that's not a good thing. It's been driven by money for over a decade. Really, if we're talking about it for real, started 30 years ago, and it's been a rocket ship the last decade. It's not slowing down.
No, it's not.
And if you think it's slowing down, you're being naive.
You're being super naive. Well, thank you for that. So it sounds like I didn't miss much, but an overarching theme of either he's playing nice or he has no clue. And I hope it's the first, not the second, for the Hokies' sake.
I'm hoping he's saying things publicly, but doing what needs to be done on the back end.
We hope he's saying the nice stuff publicly and just getting and pulling out.
I'm hoping he learned something from the Big Ten last year and that they said the right shit, but then in the meantime, they were negotiating getting two schools from the Pac-12 from the Alliance to join their conference. So,
they pulled the knives and just started sticking people left and right. Well, Brian, let's talk. We were talking about this real quick. Can or the Big Ten or the Big yeah the Big Ten and the SEC, again, long day for me, so if I stumble tonight, y'all, it is what it is. The only way that the ACC can get out of the grants of right deal is to have eight teams, correct?
Yep.
Eight, not seven, eight
a
teams.
A full majority, yeah.
Basically leave the conference. Are there eight teams that are attractive enough to the Big Ten and the SEC where they would do that?
I think combined, yes. But I don't – the problem is there's a lot of coordination that will have to happen because you would have to essentially have the SEC and Big Ten colluding to have all these schools pull out of the ACC at the same time.
Well, I don't think the Fed would like that.
That does sound, you know, I don't think that's above board, but I mean, a lot of stuff that goes down isn't above board.
Hell yeah.
Whether it's the, basically legal insider trading that pretty much every congressman does or any other, you know, stuff that goes down like that. So, I mean, I could see it happening. I don't know if it will happen. Right now, the grant of rights is the biggest firewall that the ACC has. And it's a pretty good one as long as they don't have eight teams that are willing to pull out at one time.
Yep.
And, I mean, when you look at it, there are potentially eight that could go if the Big Ten and SEC tried to move all at one time. And yep. If they don't do that, then it's going to be piecemeal. And it won't be enough to get out of grant of rights, in which case I don't think the ACC dissolves until the end of that period.
Well, I don't think it's the end of the period. Yeah. I don't think it's the end of the period. I don't think it's 14 years away because 14 years.
I don't think they pull out any earlier than 2 or 3 years ahead of that, though.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're talking, that's a decade from now. So yes,
because if we're talking about that, because with grant of rights, it's essentially saying, I'm picking up this conference. I'm already paid the new conference, or the school is already going to pay the departure fee,
which is $100 million.
On top of that, you cannot broadcast the rights for that those games
unless you pay us.
Unless you pay us, yeah. So that's the big sticking point: is that what's the point of moving early, especially earlier than 1 or 2 years, unless you're willing to swallow that.
And what's the point of the SEC or the Big Ten to even pull the trigger on that? They could just say, we're the elite conferences right now, right? We have 16 teams. We're guaranteeing our way into the playoff. We're probably going to create our own playoff. What's the reasoning for us to go after someone and basically hand, if they go after four teams apiece, and basically hand a conference, what, probably $400 million a year? Give or take?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. I think in the interest of everybody, it would be better if we had four conferences when all was said and done instead of two. But if we're heading towards two, the thing that's – I'd say there's – you know, the firewall's protecting the ACC, but in some ways it could hurt the ACC because if the SEC decides it wants to start expanding more – and now market-wise, it's going to look at the bigger markets. It wants the North Carolina market. It wants the Virginia market.
True.
But there's also some markets out west in the middle of the country that are in Big 12 and Pac-12 territory that they might target in the meantime. What does that mean for the ACC long-term? Do more schools get left out long-term because the SEC expands into, you know, these other markets in the meantime because they have less of a firewall so they can actually go and poach them a little bit sooner?
Well, the Midwest is tough, though. The Midwest is dead to the SEC and the Big Ten. The two?
One or two teams notwithstanding, yeah.
One team, two teams, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. If you're Jim Phillips right now, we already said it. To me, he has to go vicious. And obviously – does geography matter anymore?
No.
You've got to go vicious. You've got to look at market, and you've got to look at good athletic departments. And, you know, to me, you just go in the Northeast corridor of the country. You look at Oregon. You look at UW. You look at Stanford. If Cal wants to come, maybe. Right there, you've got the number 9 TV market, the number 7 TV market, and the number 20 TV market. Immediately more eyes. If the ACC also thinks about it, and this is also something you can push to ESPN and others where you can renegotiate your contracts, if you go get those teams, you're almost guaranteed a 9:30 slot. So there is an extra football game on that you're going to be able to pull probably where no other conference can. And if you have extra games, what does that mean, Brian? More money, more paper. Especially if you've got it in those markets that are numbered, you know, pretty big markets and actually pretty well-known, pretty well-respected teams. So, you know, to me, he's just got to go scorch the earth, burn it, get what you can. Notre Dame's a pipe dream because I think Notre Dame's going to get something. I think CBS is, after losing the SEC deal, my opinion is CBS is going to throw an asinine number at Notre Dame.
Yeah, and I don't think they get that, what was it, 70, 75 million that they were talking about, but I think they get somewhere in the same ballpark with the SEC, and maybe even above that, depending on, you know where they end up landing there.
I mean, they're going to get a lot of money.
Yeah, they're at least going to land somewhere right around 50.
Probably higher. Because CBS is going to be starved for college football on Saturday. So they're going to probably get NBC in a price war. And if you get them in a price war, I'm going to say 70.
What did we say the deal was right now? It was 24.
So I'd say triple. I think it could be triple.
I think it's at least going to double up, you know, and they've got the bargaining power right now because
they've got the leverage.
All the numbers are going up, and they've got the leverage, and they are a draw in and of themselves.
They are.
Unlike so many, I mean, there's only a handful of teams out there that are the television draw that Notre Dame is, and that's despite, I mean, they've had, you know, good runs here, but they haven't really had an elite squad here in a while. So it's not like Bama that's perennially in the national championship discussion.
True. Although they've been to the playoff twice in 5 years, so.
They have, but.
I get your drift on that. So I don't think that domino is going to fall because I think somebody's going to pay out their ass for it. And it's probably going to be worth it in the long run for them. So there that is. We've been on for 15 minutes and we haven't even talked Hokies yet. So let's jump to some Hokie stuff here. And Brian, let's start. Some staff updates were made back about 6 days ago, and some interesting moves. Let's start with Jerron Gavea Winslow moving from player personnel into a analyst role, joining Brian Chris, joining Xavier, joining Jeff Carpenter. Join Kerry Webb along with one more person we're going to talk about here. I don't see this as a shock.
No.
JGW was coaching down at a smaller school. He obviously has aspirations to coach at a high level. To me, the player personnel is his springboard.
Yeah, that was getting his foot in the door at his alma mater. This is him getting closer to an on-field role. You know, you can say whether you consider it a bump up in terms of role, that's questionable depending on where you are and what your aspirations are. But if his aspirations are to be an on-field coach, then this is definitely a jump for him, a move up the ladder for him. So good for him.
Good for him. You know, he always got some aligned grief back in the day, but he was a solid player. Not the most physically gifted, but definitely a good football player. And then Brian, there was one more addition to the analyst staff, Jan Johnson, who played under Pratt Penn State, team captain back in 2019, spent a year on a practice squad down at the Titans. Also, honorable mention All-American and some honorable mention Big Ten honors.
Got a little story on him at the –
Yes, we did. Monday night,
so
yeah. We'll talk about that later with Jan Johnson talking about Joe Rudolph. But that gives us six now. So you've got, we already mentioned Chris, Xavier, Jeff, Jan, Carey and JGW. Obviously, a hell of a lot bigger than last year. I mean,
especially on the analyst side.
Oh, yes. Significantly bigger on the analyst
side. We're plus one or two on the recruiting staff side, player personnel side, but we're in the big plus territory on the analyst side.
And what that's going to do, it's you always keep saying it, Brian, we're out of mom and pops. We're not, you know, massive brand yet, but when you have six, when you have really probably one guy that's probably going to go back and forth, I'm assuming that's probably going to be Chris. It's probably going to go back and forth, and Webb's going to be your special teams analyst. What it does, and Brian, you've mentioned it before, coaches aren't going to have to spend as much time in the film room.
Less time in the film room. You got guys that you can trust that's looking at stuff like that. They're giving you notes. They're saying, all right, here's where this player needs to work on next practice. Here's what this player needs to work on next practice. Here's what this upcoming opponent does well. Here's what they don't do well. And then they can explain how that is going to help you in on the field. And that these are guys that you trust with this type of role versus having just like, you know, an intern doing stuff like that. And then you have to go back and, all right, well, he made these notes, but I've got to still analyze what was on the tape and then apply that. These are guys you can trust in that type of stuff to analyze the tape itself and give you a boost going into a game prep week or something like that going into the season. So that's big.
More eyes on tapes means more catches, more fixing of issues. That's the one part I like about it is when you have a rough game, having that many analysts, the coaches don't have to be there. The coaches can trust them to figure out what's wrong. They can get on the field and actually coach correctly, correcting those errors. So love it. Hopefully next year we get eight. Maybe more.
We definitely need to keep moving forward. I think, you know, this is a big jump for where we were, but we're still probably just middle of the pack in terms of the ACC overall, in terms of the number of roles here. So we definitely need to get in at least in that upper third, if not in the top two or three.
Yeah. One other real quick note concerning some additional players. We've got a list here we're going to go through. Really cool to see a guy like AJ Hampton, who grew up in Roanoke, went to Lord Botetourt, played down at Emory and Henry, played at Mountain Union, has spent some time at Florida State. Really cool to see he got a GA position here to further his career. So awesome for that young man. And then, Brian, Carrie Lynn Wolford. We have a new role of Director of Player Engagement. We're engaging the players. I mean, it's great we got another new role, which is always awesome. But is this just keeping the kids focused on grades, keeping the kids focused on outside stuff? I'm going to be interested to hear more about this role because she had done some athletic advising pre this. Yeah. So I'm very interested to see how this role shapes up, if it's one of those goodwill roles or if it's something different.
Yeah, I mean, she did a lot on the support staff, support services, student athlete support services team before that. I think what she was in director of football assistant director of football operations before getting this role. So, I don't know what this is going to look like on paper or in practice, but I like that we're specializing.
Yes.
More on the off-field staff, whether it's recruiting or other forms of player engagement off the field.
Yeah, she was a assistant director of the SAASS. Also a Tech alum, got her degree back in 2017. So good for her. Obviously, with Gavea Winslow joining the analyst staff, Hokies were able to hire another player personnel. His name is Alex Jones. Where do you think he potentially served his capacity in a role similar?
I don't know, man.
It's either Penn State, Marshall, or somewhere like that. He actually did some work like this back in Marshall in 2019.
Okay, so he's one of the Villagrana.
He's one of the Villagrana guys. There we go. Exactly.
Shout out Mike Villagrana.
Again, I think what's more important about this, you know, obviously he has a background relationship there, is Gavale Winslow moved on. They immediately backfilled his role. That role isn't empty. Where in the past, what have we seen? We've seen somebody leave a role. The role never gets filled.
Yep.
That is what I like seeing on this.
Yeah, somebody would move up or somebody would move on, and then a role would sit unoccupied, at least in terms of official announcement, for, you know, months at a time.
Yeah.
Even if somebody was doing it formally or informally in the interim, we wouldn't really actually have any sort of noted press release on this for months and months at a time. And now we're getting it, you know, right shortly after, you know, things are going down on the front end there. So that's a good thing. They're definitely more consistent with the press releases, more consistent with communication of how the staff off the field is organized and operating.
Very true. And then obviously they added one more, Rob Branch. Look, first year and had done some time at West Virginia State. So obviously a smaller school, played at JMU. But again, we take a look at that player personnel room, and did we lose somebody a few months ago, or is this an additional position to that?
That's a good question.
Let me see. We've got Mike, we've got Rob, Alex, and Lino. So did that gain one? Did that used to be three?
Yeah, it used to be three. I think it's four now.
Okay. If somebody out there knows, please let us know, because I swear this was less than it was a few months ago. I swear, I need to keep an Excel spreadsheet. And delete, and then
where's John Earl when we need him?
All right, one more. Serena Rodriguez, an assistant of creative media, and obviously I'm going to just say this, she's going to be working with Zach Lance has done a hell of a job with the creative media stuff. I mean,
yeah,
getting that man more help is going to make the product look even better. She did some time as a graphic designer out at University of Colorado, which is really cool. And she was a student there, and she was a recruiting assistant intern. So obviously Serena's got her foot in the door of football, but I just love seeing Zach's team grow, because I feel like that department in the last 18 months has really just went through the roof of how things look visually, how the videos are cut. It's awesome to see that.
Yeah, and I really like the graphics that they have pivoted to for the 23 class and a lot of the other things they're doing as well, because I feel like that had kind of gotten stale. There was a lot of, like, the 2020 stuff that kind of bled over into 2021 and 2022, yeah. And it kind of got same-ish, and I feel like this is kind of – I think the more hands on deck has made the creative side of it a lot easier, because when you have more hands, you can more easily implement different ideas without having to, you know, just plug and play to get the job done. So
abso-freaking-lutely. So again, the support staff growing significantly in the last few years, something we knew that had to happen. So that's awesome to see. All right, Brian, let's turn to the diamond real quick and have a quick look. Five Hokies get drafted. Four in the first five rounds. Gavin Cross, the diamond, going number nine to the Royals.
Big pickup.
I mean, all year he's a top 10 pick. He's a top 10 pick. It holds true. Schoble goes 68 to the Twins. Bittison, fourth round to the Dodgers. Cade Hunter to the Reds. And then Graham Farvid. I just butchered that name, I know. Sorry, Graham. So, you know, I mean, you just admit your mistakes and you move on.
There we go.
Awesome to see that. Not only that, a couple of those, really, the first four guys are really going to get paid a significant amount. And Gavin and Tanner are going to get a boat ton of money. No one's slot. I know Gavin's slot's like 5.5. I want to say Tanner's just somewhere around 2. Likely not going to get the full pay, but going to get a lot of money. So great for them financially. But just in general for the program, you sit here, and just 2 years ago, team didn't even make the ACC tournament. They didn't make it. This year, one of the best teams in the country. And this is one of those things that can get you rolling, right? We had great season and guys are getting drafted. It's an easy sell.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, is that this is going to be a good sell on the recruiting trails. Like, hey, you come here, you know, you're going to get a bump in your draft stock by coming here and spending time as a Hokie. And with baseball, I think that's such a big thing with, you know, a lot of these kids getting, you know, some of them getting, you know, drafted out of high school and making the decision, okay, do I go take the scholarship offer that I have? Do I go ahead and try to give it a run in the minors? Hey, you come here, you spend 2-3 years here, you know, you're going to set yourself up for a better spot down the road.
Yeah. And nowadays in college baseball, because of the draft only going to 20 rounds, it is significantly helping keep players committed to their scholarship. So how you recruit now, it's even more important because, you know, roughly only about 600 guys are getting drafted. A lot of them, you know, probably more than half of them, maybe 60% are college guys because they've already got the proven record versus the potential in high school guys, you know, which is really cool. So, again, that program building, even though it's a non-revenue sport, it's, again, what do we always say, Brian? It's one of those sports like wrestling, probably getting close, like women's basketball, where it pays for itself, more money back to football.
Yeah, and I mean, it's some prestige in that, too. I mean, this is, you know, College World Series, conference playoffs. I mean, a lot of these, those championships get a lot of airtime. So it's not like, you know, a lot of the sports that you might see on a, you know, random weekday on the ACC network. You know, these are getting some prime time spots on ESPN, on ESPN2, on the ACC network. So, yeah, it's important to grow the sport and to grow your department in those sports as well that are getting that airtime.
Okay. All right, Brian, this is going to be a little segment this week. What really grinds Brian's gears? You have the floor, sir.
Okay. So, you know, we trash the NCAA pretty regularly on this show. That's not a secret to anybody that's listening. But this is the thing that bothers me the most about the NCAA. So, you know, we're in a situation where you got mass realignment, you got
NIL
stuff going on all crazy. The NCAA, you know, washes their hands. But the rules committee found it in their time to, you know, as they're looking at the game and trying to figure out how to make the game better, if there was something that just was taking away from the quality of the game.
Quality of baseball.
And that is celebratory props on the field. So that means hammer time potentially is no more. And it's just fucking stupid. It's stupid. There's no other way to say it. Why is this a thing we're focusing on?
Say it. Moron.
You're a moron. What are we doing? I mean, we got all of this stuff that's going on that you should be, you know, that you are a governing body that you should be focused on. And I'm not saying you can't focus on multiple things at one time. I get that.
Yes.
But when you're not handling the big stuff, I can't take this small shit seriously.
Nope. They should you know what? Just bring the hammer out. What are they going to do? I mean, seriously, what are they going to do? They have no spine. They have no backbone.
Sure. I mean, at this point, call their bluff. They really have no authority anymore.
What are you going to do? All right, Brian, let's turn it over to recruiting. Had a commit land on Monday. right before we were heading over to Hardywood, an RVA product at a collegiate school. Christian Williams, 6'2", 170. 247 has him as a 87 three-star, the number 14 player in the state at the moment. Tech currently sits 36 in both composite and overall. And, you know, just kind of having a look, right now, this is our highest commit to date from the state of Virginia. Brian, I know you had a little time to peek at him. What are we seeing from this? Again, athlete. A lot more athletes this year being recruited.
Yeah, he's probably going to be a wide receiver for us more than likely, just looking at the tape. You know, pretty good route runner, not elite speed, but good enough. I really like that we are targeting a lot more guys that are, you know, that 6'1" and above. Height, we get a little bit more range across the board. And I like his hands. He has pretty good hands. He's shown the ability to go up and get a ball and high point it. Good job of catching over the middle. Not afraid to catch over the middle, even at only 70. So I like it. You know, it's not a blow your skirt up get, but
good get.
It's one of those things that's keeping the train moving.
Yeah, keeps the train moving. Good potential. 247 thinks a lot more of him than the rest of the recruiting service because he's down at an 85.7. Like a 0.857. So you kind of start doing the math. There's somebody who's out here who's had him at like an 83. And, you know, I think just from hearing you, he's not quite that low. He's not closer to a 2-star than he is a potential high 3. And, Brian, you just mentioned it. There are only two guys in this thing of 16 that are under 6 foot tall. And that's Thomas Williams, the athlete down out of South Carolina, and Takee Heath out of Highland Springs. Everybody else, you know, Traylon Mitchell, we got out of Southern Nash, 6'2". Tavorian Copeland out of Appomattox, 6'4". You know, Dylan Whitaker down in Buford, 6'1". Marcel, 6'. I mean, that is a good thing to see. And I also love seeing athlete, because every time I see athlete, it's usually you get labeled that when you do multiple things on a field, right? You're probably playing wide out or running back or quarterback, but you're doing something defensively. And we've already seen in the early part of Pry's tenure, he's not afraid to just flip somebody.
Yep.
And say, you will be a better corner than you will a wide receiver, or you'll be a better safety than you will be a corner.
And well, getting athletes with the lowercase a is always a good thing. So, you know, in this case, they've got an uppercase a. You get to find where they fit in your system. And with a roster like ours that has a lot of holes in different places, getting guys with some of that flexibility and fluidity of position is not a bad thing.
Not at all. All right, let's flip it to basketball recruiting. Brandon Recksteiner commits. That name had been popping up a lot. People had been going, yeah. the son for us kids of the 90s and 2000s, the son of Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner, the nephew of the dog face Grimmel Rick Steiner, who, and say what you want to say about pro wrestling, those two guys were legit all Americans at Michigan. They were like legit football players. They were legit badasses. They were legit athletes. They just went into an entertainment industry, and I don't know. I always loved the Steiner brothers, but 6'1" point guard, 185 pounds, a top 10 player in Georgia, rated 3-star. But from everything you're reading, this kid went from like nobody knew his name to being on everybody's radar, picking up a ton of commits like LSU offered, Miami, Notre Dame, Xavier, you know, Georgia Tech, Kansas State, like some legit solid, you know, programs are offering him. And, you know, the Hokies get him with Mike Young. So, you know,
again, I've said it with this class. I mean, it holds true for basketball. Some of this is still COVID carryover and just not having a lot of tape and guys being under recruited. And you're seeing a lot of big push at the last minute once these guys start getting on other teams' radars. This is what happened here. I mean, Rex Steiner is essentially Padula 2.0, but you know, you didn't get any sophomore film. You probably only got, you know, partial junior film. So
again, it helps and probably helps the relationship was built early with him. Trying to see here real quick. Let me see if we've got the official offer date. Nope, they don't have that on here, but could probably go back through this timeline, figure it out. But again, relationship, right?
Yep.
It's every sport. And if you can get the relationships, a guy like this who's under the radar, who blows up, you might have a chance of pulling it off. So awesome to see that. All right. One more piece, Brian, here. The Hokie Hall of Fame class of 2022 is announced. I want to shout out these three folks before we get to the four football players. The first, Dortia Habazin, a three-time All-American, the second woman ever to win a national championship at Virginia Tech. Four AC titles of her career, three in hammer throw, one in weight throw. Marcel Lemnecki, two national championships, three appearances in the Olympics. Third Hokie to win multiple NCAA titles in 2012 in his weight throw championship. And then Sarah Smith, six-time ACC champion, All-American in 07 as a swimming and diving scholar athlete. So first of all, shout out to those Hokies who clearly, you know, apparently, you know, we kind of look at this and we think about, you see 2007 and that's, you know, where we're building to get here. But let's talk about the guys that we all know. And I want to start with Mike Gentry. Remember Gentrified? Remember hearing that back in the day? You hear about guys would go to Tech and get gentrified. Mike was for his time, a revolutionary strength and conditioning coach.
Yep.
And for all of us who are a certain age, when you started hearing about Gentry and what he did to some of the guys, he made a lot of those teams what they were with his programs.
When you talk about the development side of Virginia Tech and turning the 2 and 3 stars into All-Americans and NFL draft picks, it started with Mike Gentry.
Damn right it did. Mike's still working. I think he's down at Emory and Henry now, but awesome to see him go into the Hall of Fame. All right, the next one, probably if you're a football fan of any ilk, regardless of Tech, you know, fandom or not, Bruce Arians goes in, quarterback in the 1970s, coached a ton. I mean, came back, coached at Tech, I think, for 1 year. Then, obviously, in the NFL, coached your beloved Colts there for a while, Brian. I know.
Was it Pittsburgh for a long spell there as OC? Obviously,
Tampa.
Have a couple stops here recently. That have had some success. So,
yeah, but I mean, I love, you know, say what you will. Some people will say, well, this is because he won a Super Bowl. Yeah. Smart universities, if somebody wins a significant something in their life, even if they were not the best player on the field, you put them in the Hall of Fame. I don't give a damn.
Yeah, and I mean, if we're being honest, though, I mean, a lot of the numbers that he held when from his time stood up through Michael Vick. So a lot of those didn't fall until Vick got around there. So, you know, there's something to be said. I know it was a different era. You know, they don't necessarily stand out in the modern era, but you know, there was something to be said for what he did in his time. It's not just a you know, career achievement award that's getting passed out here, but it definitely helps that he turned around and won a Super Bowl as a coach in the NFL.
Yeah. All right, Brian, you a few minutes ago, you mentioned turning a two-star into a All-American, into a NFL draft pick. Essentially, that's what Mike Gentry did to Cam Chancellor. Cam Chancellor was a two-star with three offers, quarterback down, and he comes to Virginia Tech. He plays corner. He plays rover. He plays free. You know, two-time ACC champion, Super Bowl champion, all pro. When he hits you, you knew it. And, I mean, one of those guys, you know, in the late 2000s, man, you just kind of knew.
Yeah. I mean, that was, you know, when you talk about the personality of EBU, you know, there are other guys that had, you know, physical traits that stood out, but Cam was the guy that let his hitting do the talking, let his energy that he brought to the proceedings do the talking. And it's nice to see him get in there, especially, you know, after such a great NFL career, you know, essentially the thunder of the Legion of Boom there.
Yes, he was. To be honest, he was the most important part of the Legion of Boom. Because if you don't have someone of his size, when he got there, he was like 6'4", 225, who could play like a free safety, hit like a linebacker, could cover tight ends, running backs, that thing doesn't click. Don't get me wrong, Sherman was great, Thomas was great, but if you don't have him to put fear, Legion of Boom never is. Yeah. All right, speaking of putting fear, I mean, Vince Hall, man, four-year starter, 44 consecutive games started. I mean, him and the DB still are, to me, the prototypical Mike and backer in the system.
Yep.
And even the system we have now, if you told Brent Pry he could find an Xavier and a Vince in next year's class, he'd take them in a heartbeat. Something more impressive he did to me, you don't see this happen, when he won the Dudley in 06, best D1 player in the state of Virginia. He was you don't see defensive guys get that, even guys who gets a ton of tackles.
Unless they're on like special teams and they're running back, punt, and kick returns.
Exactly.
That's usually the only way you see that happen.
Exactly. I mean, but, you know, this was – the years he played were the years we were at games every year. We were constantly in front of our TV.
We were at multiple games every year. We were watching multiple games together at home, in the dorm room, in the apartment.
Apartments. We were wondering why did we start doing this at 12 today? Ah, you know, why not? And, you know, again, it's just one of those things. I'm glad he got his due. But you go through, there's been just a handful of folks to win the Dudley Award that are defensive players, and the names, you know, add up. So I'm really glad to see they put Vince Hall in the Hall of Fame. He is well deserved of it, man.
Absolutely.
All right, Brian, before we start talking about what went down Monday night, we are going to take a quick pause for a message from our digital partners.
As we take a quick break, we'd like to tell you about getting your free website report from our digital partner, Grassroots Digital Marketing Studio. They'll tell you how your website ranks on Google, on-site SEO, and social media. No commitment to buy anything. You can get your free report by visiting grassrootsdigitalstudio.com/free-website-report. Now back to the episode.
All right, so Monday was the Hokie tailgate at Hardywood here in the RBA. Me and Brian talked a couple times, say, hey, let's try to, you know, get out there about 20 to 5, 4 to 5.
Yeah.
We thought we were going to beat the traffic. Or did we beat the traffic?
Scratch that. Oh, yeah. We got there. They were parking across the street, and we were about 2/3 of the way down that lot when we got there. So, Hokies were out in full force. I don't know where the official numbers are, but I know they were north of 1,000. I think they were close to 1,500. So that's a damn good showing for Hokie Nation out here in the RVA. I'll ask you first impressions of the event.
Well, the first impression of the event, just walking after we parked and we're walking up, they had shuttles, so you did not have to walk completely from the parking lot. But just walking up, it was, I told Brian, it brought me back. It felt like we're walking up from Price's Fort when we were younger and we used to tailgate down there and going up to the stadium. You just had this feel. It's a different energy going on in Hokie Nation right now with everything that's been done since November of last year. You know, there's buzz in the air. There's just this feeling that things might get back to the way it was. And that was my feeling going in. And when you just saw how many folks were there, and I mean, just people seem excited. And I know you can say every year with football season, people are going to be excited, but it's just different this year than it has been over the last 2-3 years.
Yeah, I think there's some fire back in the program. I think there's enthusiasm, and I think there's, it's mixed with cautious optimism. I think there's not very many people that think we're going to have a very good team this year. I think there's some people that think we'll win 8 games, maybe. Yeah. Most people are more in the 5-7 range. Yeah. We're like, make a bowl, maybe get one extra one in there. Mm-hmm. And see what happens. And I think that's realistic considering our schedule and considering, some of the pickups we had in the off season in the portal and some of the freshmen that are going to be coming up and stepping up this year. So it's going to be interesting, but there is a buzz that I haven't seen. So I'll say this. I went to Hardywood, for the Richmond Carolina Club, North Carolina game. So, yeah. Last year, first game of the season, like there was enthusiasm for it just because it was like, all right, everybody's out kind of for the first time in a long time for a football related event. But there was not a lot of excitement in terms of what was going to happen. A lot of people were very, very nervous about that game. Obviously, it went our way. We played a good game. Kept it clean, and then that really kind of helped carry the day. But there's a different type of enthusiasm. There isn't as much holding our breath that disaster is around the corner.
Absolutely, and that's the feel you got there. You again, it's the renewed sense of hope. It's like a spring.
Yeah,
the nation is renewed, and when hearing Pride Talk, which we'll talk about just in a couple minutes, you'll understand why. But let's talk real quick. We got to talk to Bud Foster for a couple of minutes, and we talked about Boundary Corner. We are not going to mention what he said because we want to have Bud on the show one day. But let's just say it was very interesting as we started talking about players. Bud is in full retirement mode. We're 35 years from retirement, the way everything's going nowadays. But I hope I'm like Bud and living my best life like he was on Monday night.
My man was living his best life. He had folks bringing him drinks. He was in had the linen pants and the like Hawaiian shirt, VT shirt on. Like he was full lounging. And I looked at him. I was like, man, if I'm retiring like that. Yes. And I'm doing all right because I had to get some retirement tips. Like, what's the secret? Because he looks like he's doing it the best.
Doing it the best. And the coolest part about Bud, if you've ever been to Hardywood, he was literally in the middle of it. In the middle of it. If you wanted to walk up and have him sign something, I saw him sign a couple things. He'd take your picture. We snapped one with him, of course. And just being an ambassador out there. Like, sometimes you see folks – that are famous in public. You're like, I don't want to bother them. It seemed like Bud was there to talk to any Hokie that wanted to talk to him about anything. And
he was ready to shake all the hands and kiss all the babies. He was ready to go. And he was fired up to support Pry. He was fired up to sort of support the program. So that was big. That was big. Having a guy like that there, because he didn't have to come to that one.
No, he did not. And especially, when
this wasn't Roanoke. He didn't have to come to RVA.
He didn't have to come to RVA, especially when you hear Mike Young had the plane, which means 3.5-hour drive. Actually, 4-hour drive because he's down at Clayton Lake. So long drive back home.
He had a big drive back. It wasn't an hour flight for him.
Nope. All right. Next, Yeah, we had Whit come up and talk. Whit, believe it or not, got actually a good ovation. You know, some people's feelings of Whit might not like him, but, you know,
It's mixed. I think a lot of people feel good about Whit not talking about football, but when we talk about football, you know, people get tight buttholes about Whit. So,
yeah, you know,
and fair enough. I mean, they've got reason for that. I mean, there has been, you know, missteps on that side of things.
Let's go back. First of all, his first misstep was made when he got here. Instead of addressing football up front, he addressed everything else. People can say what you want to say about the Fuente hire. At that point in time, that was literally a top three hire. Don't get it twisted. The 2020 press conference.
The 2020 Jesus is worse Christ. than the hire itself. Yes. If you want to point to two things to complain to Whit about, extending Fuente too early.
Yes.
Not getting rid of him in 2020. Those are the two biggest things that you can criticize Whit about, aside from not addressing football sooner.
But also give him credit when things went sideways in 2018, readjusting his plan and getting the facilities updated.
He fast-tracked the stuff that had to be fast-tracked if you wanted to actually build things out.
And he did.
Again, we're probably about 1 year behind where we should be with Coach, whether that ended up netting us Pry or Shane or Tony Elliott or whoever the hell it would have been. We're about 1 year behind on the rebuild, but aside from that, the other stuff that when he finally got around to it, he's putting it together the way it needs to.
And he did it.
Obviously, we all want things to happen yesterday because we care about the team. Mm-hmm. It means something to us. And with all this stuff going on with realignment and NIL, we feel like we don't want to be one of those teams that's left behind. We don't want to be the leftovers.
No, don't want to be leftovers at all. And he addressed it, you know, talking about how complex of a situation it is, realignment is, said it's something that now is a conversation every day in Merriman. Talked about it at his previous stop, Cincinnati. It was a conversation every day there. So, obviously, it is up on his mind on the forefront. He mentioned honest dialogues with, you know, Commissioner Phillips. I'd like to hear what that honest dialogue is. I hope it's, listen, as soon as we can, we're going to leave unless you do something a lot better.
And you need to get some more markets in here that's solidifying our position. You need to get better media rights. Or in 3 to 5 years, you're looking at having fewer members of this conference if things line up.
Yep, exactly.
And if you're not, I mean, at some point we got to light a fire under the commissioner's ass too. Because yes. I know he understands the situation, but if he's not getting pressure every day.
Yes.
Then, and especially from schools like Virginia Tech, it doesn't matter if Florida State or Clemson or Miami or even, you know, UNC or NC. I mean, most of those schools are probably going to find a home in whatever the new world looks like. It's the fringe schools like Virginia Tech, like UVA, like Louisville, like Georgia Tech, that have good markets, but, you know, have some shortcomings in terms of where their programs are at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That are going to probably need a little bit of a boost. And if we're not pushing for it, then that gives us more potential to get left behind.
Exactly. All right. Something else he addressed, talked about why Brent Pry was the guy, you know, made the comments that he was the initial guy, one of the initial guys on his list. But also made the comment that he knew that Virginia Tech had to get back to the defensive mentality, which was, you know, very, very good to hear from him because, you know, you think Virginia Tech, you think defense. Yeah. You know, the one thing, and this was the ultimate shot right here. Everything is better under Brent.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's not wrong.
He's not wrong, but, like, that's just – he didn't say it, but he basically backhanded the shit out of Justin Fuente with that. Like, everything is better with him. I'm sorry.
And I'll circle back to the defensive mentality because – when we look at the teams that are consistently winning the national championship and consistently going to the college football playoff,
true.
Yes, they do have some good offenses in there, particularly looking at like Ohio State, you know, Oregon, but all of them play either very good or nasty defense.
Yep.
Right? Now, I mean, when we think of Clemson, when we think of Ohio State, when we think of UGA, when we think of
Bama,
obviously, and any of the other guys in the conversation, when you think of them, you think of defense first and everything else is secondary. Ohio State might be the only one that's probably in the, you know, more or less balanced in that category.
Maybe, but I mean, think how many nasty, I mean, Bosa's, Young.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm saying they have elite offense and elite defense. They're not stepping it quite up as much as like a Bama on the defensive side.
I got you. All right. Well, the other thing he's talked about, everything has to be built right. We agree with that. Because, again, I think he saw what happened in 16. He did not build it right. He extended somebody too early. He gave somebody too much leash. So it has to be built right.
He gave him so much leash that he continuously hung himself by not getting rid of personnel that were not up to par.
Yep. Now, Brian, you love what he said on the NIL. You love when he said, us ADs told the NCAA, this NIL shit, it's going to affect recruiting, and they basically brushed them off.
The NCAA continues to just stick their thumb up their ass on a lot of this stuff. The NCAA had over a decade to figure this out. They got to a point where states started passing laws. So they kicked the can down the road. Now, once states are passing laws, now they are worried about if they put in stuff now, are we opening ourselves up to lawsuits? So now they got scared of the lawsuits. So they're like, well, if we're going to do this, we just got to have open season. And now you got open season. And of course it's being used to recruit players. What'd you think he was going to do?
Exactly. But I just love, like, it sounds like the ADs were out there like trying to push this, like, get this done. It's going to affect things. And they didn't do anything. So
put a reasonable plan out there instead of just saying, all right, well, this is the thing now.
Exactly.
Figure out how it's going to be implemented within your state legislature, within your conference, within your school. Like, it's just a cluster, and it varies from state line to state line in terms of what teams are doing. It varies from school to school. It varies from conference to conference. And it's not just about the dollars. It's about what is and is not permissible because, again, the NCAA didn't give enough guidance.
Exactly. All right. You know, he did talk about got to be modest with NIL. We'll see how that plays out. But let's talk about, he mentioned a few things on game day experiences. He said the Wi-Fi is going to be slightly better in Lane. He got clapped. Yeah, yay.
I need a definition of that.
hey, 1% would be better than zero or negative, so I'll give him that. He also said that the restrooms, the pissers are going to be better.
Rest in peace, troughs.
No. Troughs are fine. I don't have an issue with troughs. You really want to make the bathrooms better? Put some TVs in there on the wall. So if it's, you know, the third quarter and we're driving or you know, we just punted the ball, I don't worry about running to the pisser and missing the game. Because as you know, you go through the walkways and go get a beer, or get some food, there are TVs there. You can see the plays. You don't miss anything. Except, you know, that feeling. I want to be able to go to the bathroom, and if it's a longer line, if I'm in there taking a piss, I can still see what's happening on the field. That's all I ask for.
There are two TVs on each side where the troughs are.
Exactly. one as you walk in, one above the trough. If you've got to go into the stalls where you're just shit out of luck. And one when you exit.
And you're shitting, so you're definitely out of luck.
You're definitely out of luck. You might as well just.
Nobody wants to shit in Lane Stadium. Nobody wants to shit at any public stadium, if we're being honest about it.
Exactly. All right. So Witt cheered most of the night, and then he got the boo at the end when he said, stick it in, would not be back.
Yeah. What the hell? Why are we still doing this? Why? We're still kicking this can down the road. People.
Well, you know what? It's your nasty mind if you're thinking that way.
We're trying to put the ball in the end zone, people. Where is your mind going?
We are in the red zone. trying to get the ball, in the end zone for a touchdown. Where are your minds at? All you people who complain about it, where are your minds at? I've heard that since 2003, and all I ever thought about it, oh, we're down here. We're about to get it in. We're about to score. None of this other stuff you guys mentioned. So clearly, those who are against it are pervs.
Seriously. That's one way to sell it, Curtis.
it means we're in the red zone. That's what it means to me.
It means we're about to stick it in to the red zone.
Exactly. All right, let's talk about Brent Pry and him up on stage with Mikey Burnup, who we got to meet and talk to about 5 minutes. Mikey Burnup is awesome.
He's that dude.
He is that dude. Like, he is the guy. Like, if you say, you know, game day weekend, you could spend time with, you know, any personality. I know he's in the booth the game, but Mike just seems like the guy who owns it. He was walking around, looked like he owned the place. He's like 70 years old. He looks 55. He looks in great shape. You got to love Mike Burnup, man. You just got to.
Yeah, he was tearing it up. We got to talk to him about 5 minutes. Got to tell him that his good buddy Wes says hello. So
yeah, he was excited about that and everything. But love Mikey Burnup, man. And hopefully every event, Hokie event I go to, I'm trying to find Mikey Burnup to talk to him for 5 minutes.
Yeah, I definitely. He's one of the guys that, you know, you can have a beer with and just talk about. Not just Hokie sports, but just like anything in general. Like, he's that guy that's going to have that conversation with you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about another guy you want to share a beer with. Brent Pry gets up on stage, and it's immediate. The energy, it's a joke. It's on Twitter. It's in chat. He gets it, and he does get it.
This guy gets it.
This guy gets it. He's up there, pours himself a beer on stage. You know, just, you know, been here 8 months, brings out his wife to introduce her.
Cheers in the crowd, taking a panoramic selfie of the crowd and sending it to recruits.
I mean, you know, he talked about he knew that this was the space because it was the fandom. And that was his sell point. And, you know, it didn't feel like a sell point, though. It felt like it was a genuine response from him. And I mean, he was just having fun up there.
Yep.
During that interview portion,
he was having a good time. He, like you said, he said drinking beer. What I noticed, and I hate to juxtapose this with Fuente, just because, you know, I think we've kicked the dog enough at this point, but
we have the same. He's the previous guy. It's got to be a comparison.
But at the same time, when we look at an event like this. And we had this like Q&A session with Burnup, right? So he's up on stage, he's up there with Burnup, they're talking. But Pry is, I'd say, leading the discussion just as much as Mikey is. It wasn't Mikey directing him where to go, asking him the question, getting the canned answer, moving on. Like, Coach Pry was up there to talk and to interact with the crowd. And then also he was going to answer some questions that Mike Burnup had for him.
Yep.
And you could tell that from the jump. I mean, the energy was just completely different.
Exactly. And that's what it was. It was, I'm not here to answer questions. I'm here to talk to the fans.
Yeah. I'm just here so I don't get fined situation. This exactly. is very, very much, I'm here, I'm selling the program. I'm selling the program so I can sell the program to recruits. It's all cyclical and it all feeds into what we want this team to get to. Right. So, and I think he understands that it's a multi-prong, like being a head coach is a multi-prong thing. It's not just, I've got to be good at managing a game. I've got to be good at understanding X's and O's. It's not just that.
It's everything.
It's so much else, and I think he understands those aspects of it, and he did a good job of selling those things to the people that were there, And I think a lot of it, you know, as you said, it's not just selling. It's that's just how that's his personality. He's a very energetic guy. And you said it too. He seems to understand when he's talking to people, how to talk to people. Right.
That's it. And that goes because if you remember what he was talking about, you know, he talked about how he convincing his family that this was the right move. His son's transferred to Tech from Penn State since then. But then he talked about his first real job is recruiting the staff. And as we start looking at this staff, you know, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
Talking about Joe Rudolph, talking about Tyler Bowen, Stu Holt, Fontel Mines. Convincing them, you can see it. And, you know, you look at those guys and you start hearing them talk, they are a plethora of different personalities.
Yeah, and I think that's a bigger sell because I think in general – top to bottom, do you like the offensive staff better than the defensive staff? How do you feel about the offensive staff?
The offensive staff? Oh, man. I do like the offensive staff more than the defensive staff. Just because as I start looking, not to knock the defensive staff, don't get me wrong, between JC, Marv, Cheetah and Prelo, you've got a lot of years of experience.
Don't forget Quinn.
And Quinn.
Don't leave out Quinn.
I mean,
Quinn, you know. Quinn's had some recruiting wins. Quinn's breaking Brad Hokey style.
Okay, don't forget Quinn. We need Quinn there. We needed Quinn there Monday night when we were eating those wings and pizza to give us a review of those.
Yeah. There's
wings and pizza. But when you look at it, you look at that defensive staff, it's I'm gonna laugh. That's a Hokie defensive staff. That's a super bright linebacker coach. He's basically the same age Bud was when he took over the job.
Yep.
That is a grinder defensive line coach. Think about Charlie Wiles. Think about some of those guys. That's our mold, right? That's our mold. But then think about the offensive staff and, you know, especially Joe Rudolph. And I love Dwight Vick because Dwight Vick is looking at Joe Rudolph and he sees J.B. Grimes. And J.B. Grimes was the O-line coach back in the 90s who sort of, when we were power running the ball with Kenny Oxendine and mashing people, he was that guy. Look at him. Look at Bowen. You know, Stu Holt left Louisville and one of his good friends to come to Brent Pry.
Yep.
It's this feel of that's what our defensive staff has always looked like. And it's looking at the offensive staff, it's like, it's never looked like this. It's never looked like this. Or it hasn't looked like this in a long, long time.
No. And I think that's the difference is because from a recruiting standpoint, if you're recruiting a staff, he had a harder sell getting offensive guys to come here than he would defensive guys because he is an established defensive coach. He's one of the probably five best defensive coordinators in the country as of last year. And, you know, he was saying, all right, I'm a defensive-minded head coach. Come coach defense for me. That's not as hard of a sell as it is, hey, I'm a first-time head coach in my 50s that's a defensive specialist. Come coach offense for me.
Exactly. And it just shows you how the guy can talk to people because, I mean, he convinced a few guys to come.
And, I mean, I'll say this. I mean, and you know, I know there's other coaches that are like this out there, Saban for one, obviously, but, you know, Brent doesn't seem like a guy that's in his early 50s. He's got a lot more fire in the belly than a lot of guys that are that age.
100%.
So,
and I tell you something that he really had a fire passion about was talking about Virginia recruiting, because when he made that statement that if we don't know most about Virginia recruits, we're not doing it right. I mean, we hear that. We see how we've recruited Virginia this year, and it looks like, you know, he's still targeting players from Virginia. You know, the whole regional footprint recruits, it's not bullshit. It is literally – that is his game plan because he feels like if he can win this state and win the outer, that six-hour radius and get good players, it's going to be the best-case scenario to rebuild the program of what it was.
Yeah, and when we look at the, you know, the top 25 players or so in Virginia, you know, this cycle, you know, other schools definitely had a head start on us. We're making our hay in that, you know, 12 to 22 range, 12 to 25 range. That's where we're making our hay right now in terms of recruits. Looking forward, we got to get back in the top 10. And I think some of that starts with, you know, and he made an emphasis. He's like, we got to get Penn State out of this damn state. We got to get UNC out of this state.
Yes.
We got to keep more of these Virginia kids home. And, you know, he was a part of doing a lot of that, making that ground up in Virginia. So, I mean, he understands what it takes. I'm hoping he can get the job done as we look to the 24 and the 25 classes coming up the next 2 years. But he knows the blueprint. We got to see if he can execute it, right?
Absolutely. And something else, talking about blueprint and his leadership styles, he talked a little bit about the Bristol retreat, which we hit on when it happened, about a week after it happened. But something that he said in there, again, we knew that we heard about, he wanted everybody on the same page, the same language, the same thing. So if you walk from Terrell, you know, Bowen's office to, you know, Gavea Winslow's office, they're preaching the same things. That was the first big thing. But the other big thing was this, and I don't know if you caught it, but it turned my ear because of what kind of leader he is. He talked about he did a lot of the talking. And he said, yep, next year when we do this, I do not want that. I want to hear from everybody, because they took everybody, yep, which is crazy.
Literally everybody.
But when you hear that in a guy of a leadership position, those guys usually, you know, as long as they take what they hear from everyone under them and start figuring out how to work it and how to make everybody else successful, usually those guys are the most successful guys.
Yep. If you can drive that culture and you can, you know, have that very much top-down message where what you hear from the top guy is the same thing that you're hearing from the player personnel guy or even the video guy, or like, if the message is the same and the message is consistent, then the behaviors are going to be the same way. And I'm talking about the behaviors of the players.
Yeah.
Whether that's getting extra work in, whether that's understanding the playbook, understanding what you need to do in certain scenarios, whether that's, you know, getting an extra workout, staying after practice, all those things, those little things that drive the culture, add up. And getting that consistent messaging and that consistent way of things being taught and things being emphasized is going to be important going forward. Because if you don't get the foundation of that right for the culture, then you're going to start seeing cracks. And I think that's some of what happened with the previous regime, is that there wasn't a culture, there wasn't a foundation. It was just a collection of ideas that eventually fell apart.
Yep, and it's also the thing of what we talked about before. They were there to coach and nothing else. And with this staff, you kind of see it. They're not there to just coach. They understand coaching is the most important part of our job, but it's not the only part of our job. And I'm not talking about, you know, teaching the young men and, you know, helping them prepare for themselves in life, but understanding you're part of a larger community. I think that's what this coaching group gets more than anything. Now, Brian, let's jump over to this, because I want to get your thoughts first. He talked about NIL. He talked about a lot of things on NIL. Which one hit you the most listening to him?
So I think him being a realist about the NIL situation for Blacksburg was the thing, because I don't think he could have went in there and said, we're going to beat the UNCs and the Miamis and the Clemsons on this NIL thing out the gate. I think that's the goal, but I don't think that's something that we're going to get to right away. And he said that he doesn't want NIL to be the reason that a player picks Virginia Tech. And I get that. I think there might be situations where there would be an exception to that, depending on the player, depending on their caliber, especially for an in-state player.
Yeah.
But in most terms, I don't want a player to pick Virginia Tech just because they're giving the largest NIL. I but as he said, we must be competitive. We got to be in the ballpark. So if somebody's getting, you know, something from Pitt, we got to say, all right, here's what we can offer from an NIL perspective, from these collectives here, but we also sell in the university as well. And you know, when we talk about the reason a player picks something, NIL definitely is going to be in the discussion, but there's got to, yes, it's going to be a piece of the pie, right?
It can't
and
be
for the some player. Piece. Some players, it's a bigger piece, and some it's a smaller. It can't be half the pie, but it, yeah, it needs to. You know, we know it's going to be in there somewhere.
Well, he said it. We've got to be competitive in it, and he yeah said it. And he just straight up called out fans, old and young alike, and basically said, you've got to support the athletes in some way. And, you know, we saw today with Triumph NIL with Dax, Dwayne, Caleb. Who am I missing? I'm missing somebody. Efforting.
Yeah, wow. And I think as you're speaking on that, I think the big thing that they've been focused on this offseason with NIL is more of take care of the guys that are on your roster right now.
Yep. Malachi.
Yes.
With Triumph.
Yeah. So I think that's been the focus this offseason is kind of taking care of some of that because there wasn't that type of foundation put in place. It was very much it seemed like before it was like, here are some tools to help you with NIL, but it was very mm-hmm much a you're on your own in terms of what you are able to do with it. Yep. And now we've got collectives that the school is actively partnering with, and this is helping really, you know, facilitate a better relationship with those athletes from an NIL perspective. And I'm hoping that we continue to build on that. And Triumph is doing a good job. Shout out B Hill and those guys,
yep,
that are a part of that. And we definitely got to keep that moving forward, and those that have the capacity to help with that, you know, that needs to be something that's going out there, just like you know, when you're looking at Drive for 25 and the Hokie Scholarship Fund. I mean, you know, if you're not doing it, we're going to get left behind.
Very true.
Not saying that, you know, it's got to be the first and foremost thing, the most important thing, but as Pross said, we got to be competitive. If we're not competitive, we're going to keep falling behind.
True. All right. Well, Brian, let's, as we start wrapping up here tonight, we actually got the opportunity. We stood in line. We're fans. We met the head coach. We were there with probably 3-4 minutes, talked with him, clinged a little beer with him. And what you said earlier about the recruits you felt with us, because the gentleman before us, he wanted him to send a video to a friend, right? And he got on the video and he did it. With us, we just shot the shit with him. And it just felt like a buddy. You know, he clinged the beers with us. We, you know, said 3 or 4 things here and there. And he's just having a conversation with us. It felt so... It didn't feel like he was trying to do it. He just felt like he looked at us and said, these are a couple, you know, say what we are. We're probably 30-year-old guys out for a night together, have some fun, Hokie fans. I'm gonna have fun with them.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely understands how to read the people that he's interacting with. When he talks about building relationships, I think being a guy that can read folks quickly and understand how to approach them, that's a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's a skill that's very hard to learn, and he's got it. You know, whether that translates to more wins on the recruiting trail for us long term is to be seen, but in terms of just interacting with the fans and being the type of coach that gets the fan base enthusiastic about mm-hmm what they're doing. I mean, we got a winner on that front. So, you know, we'll see if we can keep the wins coming as we roll into the season on that front. But
it's true. Well, I think as we were, I can't remember who I said it to, you give the guy 6 years. I mean, because we are in a rebuild. We're in a very tumultuous time. You can't give him 3 years and expect him to be at 9-10 wins a year. If he does it, wonderful. If it doesn't, I'm in for the long haul with this one. But another thing, notice, Brian. So, you know, we had our moment. We talked with him a couple minutes. We went on. We got our dinner. He was there a good hour.
Yep.
He did not have to be there a good
hour. After he finished speaking.
After he finished. And just talking to people, taking pictures, signing, having a conversation. And just, again, that's where we noticed whoever you were is who he was going to adapt to it. I think that's why he's such a good recruiter, because he is going to adapt and figure out, what's my baseline for you? What's my baseline for you?
Yeah.
I'm still going to be me, but I'm going to figure out what part of me and you connect the best. And when you have a guy like that, you know, what'd you always say, Brian, about Fuente? If Fuente would have just had a little personality, he would have got a little more slack. Pry has the personality. And if we win something like 6 games, maybe if we only win 5 games, I think some people are going to be saying, yeah, he walked into a shitty situation this year. You know, the recruiting bridges have been burned all over the state, all over the region. This guy's got a rebuild job to do.
Yep. Yeah, bridges burned all over the state. Roster in shambles. It's a bad 1-2 punch, right? You got to rebuild a roster, but you also have to rebuild the relationships that helped you build that roster. So, you know, he's doing a good job of laying that foundation that we're talking about, both from a culture standpoint and from a relationship standpoint with players, coaches, all the folks in the state, and all the folks in the footprint. So I think we're on the right track from that perspective. You know, we'll see long term how the fit is, but I think in terms of just, you know, who he is as a coach and that side, I think we got a hit here.
We got a big hit here. All right, Brian, anything breaking over the last little while here?
I don't see anything, man. I think we're good.
All right, let's wrap it. That wraps up this episode of the Boundary Corner Podcast. I am Curtis Wilson.
I'm Brian Siegler.
Visit our website at boundarycornerbt.com to listen to all of our episodes. While you are there, don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, subscribe on YouTube and your favorite podcast source, including Spotify, Amazon, and Apple Podcasts. Shout out to Conrad, JK, and Walker, three of our listeners we got to meet this week. Appreciate you guys coming out and meeting us. It was really cool. Don't be afraid to message us. You're now officially, you put a comment in, Brian will put it up while we're chatting, regardless what it's about.
Inner sanctum.
We always let our buddy Jason Long play us in, and he plays us out. Check him on his new website, jasonlongmusic.com, where you can link to all of his music on Apple, Spotify, and his YouTube and Facebook pages. This weekend, he's going to be at the Grandin Farmers Market down in Roanoke, and August 6th at Outer Space out in Floyd County. So check him out there. We thank you for listening. And as always, let's go.
Hokies.